And good morning. Thanks to the help you get from ASC certified technician Dan Burns from Lloyd's Automotive. We'll help you keep it running. Good morning to you, Dan.
Good morning, Denny. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, thank you. I was listening again to our theme song that we've used for so many years and the word chrome. I wonder how many years it's been since there's been chrome on vehicles. What do you say? What do you think?
It's a long time. Maybe long back time to the 70s, I suppose, yeah.
I would think, yeah. If anybody has a question, if you have a problem with your personal vehicle and you need to bring it in for service at your favorite shop or your favorite dealer, you want to know what could be wrong with it before you bring it in. And information is always good to have, more of it than less of it. Call us or text Dan, 651-989-9226. It's the same number for a phone call if you want to chat with Dan, or send him a text, 651-989-9226. Had the pleasure of visiting Lloyd's Automotive this past week, Dan. It had been a while since I had brought Sandy's vehicle in for an oil change. I don't think I've ever waited that long before, but I think circumstances maybe warranted. I mean, you've seen vehicles coming in like maybe they should have brought it in a little earlier for service. But what do you recommend? At least once a year, if not twice, maybe?
Yeah, I think twice a year, you know, is a good minimum, spring and fall.
Mm-hmm.
The seasons are different and different things need to be checked. And so I think spring and fall is just a good schedule. And a lot of cars right now are not quite due for an oil change. But
yeah,
most of the time we do it anyway as part of the checkup.
Time and not mileage necessarily, yeah.
Yeah, time and not mileage, yep.
651-989-9226. I wanted to mention that Dan will be with us till just about 7:45. So don't wait if you do have any kind of a car care question. Call it in or text it in sooner rather than later. We like to try to get all the questions answered before Jack Farrell steps in at 7:45. During that visit, I was noticing, because with an oil change, you, of course, were rotating the tires. And I saw that you were using kind of a rubber mallet to get to kind of break it free. Was there an issue with that? Is that kind of typical or what?
Well, that is typical in this climate, and it is, that was a new car, so that did not take much. Some of them, you know, if the wheels have been on for a long time, take a major experience to get them off because of the rust and corrosion. And when I think of somebody trying to, I mean, it would be impossible to try and change a tire on the road under those conditions. You could not safely get underneath the car and hammer on it the way that you have to with a rubber mallet to be able to get them off. And so it's a big deal. And you notice, Denny, that in the process of that, I took a wire brush and cleaned all of that corrosion off. And then you also notice that I took some thick lubricant and put it on those hubs so that won't happen again. And that's an important thing to do too. And by the way, that's why you need to know who your shop is and who your mechanic is, because you want stuff done that way. And you saw, Denny, it takes a long time.
It really does. I mentioned it because son Tony was with, we were watching through the window, and I've seen you do this before, and I don't know if everybody does this. I suppose they should. Is that you take your you tighten the lug nuts after you're all through. It's still on the hoist. You tighten them all down, and then when you bring the vehicle down on the ground, you use a torque wrench. What's the deal with that? I thought you'd already tightened them, and then you're doing it again.
That's true, actually. On every bolt on every car, we have a torque spec. The oil drain plug, the lug nuts, every bolt. You can look it up, you know, when you're doing an oil pan, whatever you're doing, valve cover gaskets, a head gasket. Every single bolt has a torque spec, and by the book, you're supposed to torque every single nut and bolt on the car, which, of course, you don't have time to do, and experience has taught you over the years that, you know, what tight is and so forth. But when it comes to wheels and tires, We require it at Lloyd's that you torque, that you retorque the wheels properly, because that's a major safety deal. You know, if a bolt falls off of a water pump, nobody gets hurt. If the lug nuts fall off and the wheels fall off, people get hurt. That's a big deal. Yeah. So, any of the significant safety nuts and bolts that we do require that you torque them exactly to what the manufacturer specifies, so that we know they're tight and they're going to stay tight.
I'm glad you do that. All right.
Yeah.
Let's grab a phone call from, I think Barry is calling in from Egan this morning. Barry, you are on with Dan Burns.
Good morning. I have a 2007 Buick Lucerne, and there's a fiberglass or plastic shield that is underneath the engine compartment. It runs from the front bumper back under the engine compartment, and it has come unattached at the front end and is like flapping in the wind when I drive. Is that something that needs to be replaced, or can it be reattached at the front bumper? Is it necessary to leave that in place? What's the situation there? I'll hang up and listen.
Well, it's best to leave those in place. They put them there for sound dampening and for airflow, so that the air flows through the engine compartment and around the vehicle properly. And so, you know, they're expensive and complicated to put on, and the manufacturer puts them on. So there must be a good reason for doing that. Oftentimes in Minnesota, they get caught up in the snow and so forth, and or a curb that's too tall that you run over when you're parking the car, and they get knocked off. And so we have to deal with this all the time, where many times we have to get creative to reinstall them with some zip ties or these push button things that lock them up into place, you know, by pushing them into a hole. But in many cases, we're able to just refasten them securely. In a worst case scenario, you know, if they're too far damaged and too far gone, then they need to be replaced. But that's not a big deal either. So, you know, they just have to be ordered ahead of time. And, you know, they're certainly available because they break all the time. But we deal with putting those back up all the time. So that would be no big deal to bring that in and have that done.
Excellent. All right, Ken, you're going to be next. Don't go away. We have a line open if you want to call in your question for Dan. 651-989-9226. Same number applies to a text if you want to send Dan a text message instead of a phone call. 651-989-9226. Keep in mind, Dan will take his leave here about 7:45, so don't wait if you have a question. All right, let's take this break. We'll be right back with more Car Care on News Talk 830 WCCO. And good morning. Welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show. Denning along here with Dan Burns, who is an ASE certified technician on that beautiful Grand Avenue in St. Paul, Lloyd's Automotive. Exactly where, Dan, is Lloyd's located?
Well, you know, you were just here this week, Denny.
That's
we
right. Short-term memory.
Yeah. We are at 982 Grand Avenue, which is right between Lexington and Victoria on Grand Avenue. You can find us on the web at lloydsautomotive.net. LLOYDS, LloydsAutomotive.net, or give a call this morning. We'll be here as soon as 8 o'clock at 651-228-1316.
Very good, and we'll get you that information before Dan leaves us. He will be with us till just about 7:45, so don't wait if you have a question. We have texters and we have callers, Dan. In fact, we promised Ken. Ken would be next in White Bear Lake. Ken, thanks for waiting. What's your question for Dan?
Yes, I have a 06 Buick Rendezvous, and after the car has been running while it's warmed up, when I'm stopped, and this only happens occasionally, it'll hesitate, then lurch forward. I'm wondering if that's what kind of a problem that might be.
Well, one of our least favorite words in this vehicle is occasionally or intermittently, because they make them tricky to track down and experience so that we can have an idea. There's a couple of questions I would have, and I probably would need to experience it to be able to answer that. I wonder if it's the engine surging, or if it's the transmission surging, and you know, if the transmission is doing a funny shifting thing late or something like that, or is the engine idle actually adjusting and surging, causing that lunging feeling? And there's a whole bunch of things that can cause the vehicle idle to change. For example, if the air conditioning is on and the air conditioning compressor cycles on, then it's all computer controlled. The computer turns the idle up because the air conditioning puts a load on the engine. And I have an idea. I've had people complain of this before, and that's what it turned out to be, that just at the wrong moment, the air conditioning turns on, and then the idle turns up a little too high. For example, if you're going into a parking spot and you turn the steering wheel all the way in one direction, that puts a big load on the engine, and that'll cause the idle to go up too. So there's a whole bunch of things that'll cause the idle to go up, and I wonder if one of those things is either what you're experiencing and it's normal, or is one of those things defective and causing a problem that you've not experienced before. But I probably would, you know, in any shop would probably have to feel that. So we're happy to go out and go for a ride with a customer and see how that feels, or see what they're experiencing in these odd intermittent situations like that.
Yeah, like you said, that's a tough word, intermittent. Once in a while, that's more detective work. All right, thank you for the call. 651-989-9226. Texter says this. It doesn't say what kind of a vehicle it is, but this texter says that they have an oil leak, needed the gasket as well as oil pan replaced due to rust. Is that an expensive proposition? But again, we have no idea what the vehicle is.
You know, it can be an expensive proposition, and it seems funny, Denny, to have a customer come in complaining that their oil pan, which is full of oil all the time, is rusting out.
But, yeah.
We actually see that quite a bit, where it rusts, you know, from the outside in, of course, and the rust eventually gets deep enough that the oil starts to slowly drip out. And yes, you're right. We need to know what kind of car that is, because in a worst case scenario, the engine would have to come out to replace that oil pan. I doubt if that's true. That would be rare. But in many cases, the engine cradle and steering rack and all of that need to be lowered to get room to access the oil pan and replace it. And then the third and best scenario is oftentimes, or from time to time, the oil pan is, you know, readily accessible, and then it's no big deal. If you don't have to remove a bunch of stuff to get at the oil pan, then you can change it quickly and easily, and it's no big deal.
Good. Let's get another phone call in here. Judy, I believe, is waiting there in Cottage Grove. Judy, you're on CCO with Dan.
Okay. Morning. I have a 1970 Cutlass, and my odometer just stopped working about a month ago. Do you fix that at your shop?
We do fix that at our shop, and any shop in town would be able to fix that. I'm not sure. I'm not sure on that vintage if that is an electronically controlled speedometer cable, or it's probably old enough that it's a mechanically controlled speedometer cable and driven by a cable. And if that's the case, maybe the cable or something just broke. But at any rate, older car like that, diagnosing and repairing the speedometer is quite simple, and would not be anything that you need to really worry about. You can bring that in anywhere, and they'll be glad to take care of it for you.
Very good. Let's see. Good morning. This texter says, just got an O2 Maxima. It needs a high-pressure power steering hose. Online tells me that DEX 3 ATF will work for fluid instead of Nissan PSF. Is that true, is the question. Maybe you can decipher some of what they're saying here.
Yeah, they're all hydraulic fluids. The power steering fluid and the transmission fluid and all that are all hydraulic fluids, and oftentimes they are interchangeable. Oftentimes, DEX 3, which is a transmission fluid, is interchangeable for power steering fluid. And if the manufacturer says that that's just fine, or if the aftermarket chat lines say that that's just fine, it probably is. I would not be surprised if that's the case. So if you found that somewhere and it's a reliable source, I think that I would be comfortable doing that.
Excellent. I know we have to break here momentarily, but I know from time to time, Dan, you applaud people who try to do the work themselves. I know you've said that on many shows, and this listener was thanking you for enabling listeners to be confident to do the work themselves. Now, there's some things that they need a pro like you, but you've done that before. You have applauded people who've tried to do the work themselves.
Oh, there's lots of things that you can and should try, and there's lots of information, YouTube videos and so forth that are available. When it comes to safety, though, and something that we need to be certified in to even be able to do, then I kind of pause and say, you probably should let a professional do that. Because if you're not familiar with it, you don't want to put yourself and your family and the other motorists on the road at risk by doing something that you don't know what you're doing. So,
good point.
But when it comes to bulbs and wiper blades and a whole bunch of things, if you feel comfortable doing it, go ahead. It's great.
Absolutely. All right, Dan, let's take a quick break here. And Dan will be with us for about another 15 minutes here on Newstalk 830 WCCO. And welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show. Denny Long here with Dan Burns, ASE Certified Technician at Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. Dan, we have callers and we have texters, so let's see how many folks we can help out this morning. Let me grab this this text, and then we'll get Randy on the horn. It says, hello, I have a 2014 Chevy Cruze, 76,000 miles on it. I've had nothing but problems with the engine. Are the 1.4-liter engines problematic, have you heard, is the question.
Yeah, no, I have not heard that particularly. There are models and vehicles that have had trouble, but I have not heard that particularly about that particular engine.
Okay. Let's get to the phones. I think Randy has been waiting there in Andover to ask you a question. Randy, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. I have a 2016 Toyota Tacoma, and I got a good set of tires on the truck. But I got that loud roaring noise, like. And so I went to the tire company or people, and they said I have a cupped tires. So long story short, I replaced them with Michelin. And $800 later, I still have not as loud, but I still have that rumble noise. And I understood by one of the discount tire person said, your wheel bearing sound could sound just like that. Is that true?
A tire and a wheel, a cup tire and a wheel bearing sound very much the same. The difference is with a, when you're going down the road, a soft, smooth road, if it's a wheel bearing, most often if you turn the wheel just a little bit to the left and to the right, you can get the noise to change or even go away. With a tire, the noise will not go away. It'll stay there. So that's kind of the rule of thumb with when we're test driving a car, deciding whether it's a tire or a wheel bearing. But bear in mind, we've been fooled too. So noises are tricky and difficult. And I don't think they probably did you a disservice, because if a tire is cupped, you can clearly see it. And if it's still making the noise with Michelin tires, which are very good tires, then it probably is not the tire anymore. I do believe that it is something else. And the next thing that you would go after would be a wheel bearing. When we put the vehicle on the hoist, we can spin the tire and feel one of the four tires being a little more gravelly or a little different feel to it. And so that's oftentimes how we find a wheel bearing also.
Very good. Speaking of tires, here's a texter that came in a bit ago. It says, what's the best air pressure for tires? Well, you can find that out on every vehicle, right?
There you go, Denny. That's exactly right. It's right on the driver's door jamb. It tells you what the manufacturer recommends for tires, front and rear. Sometimes they're different, front and rear. And if you put exactly that air pressure in, which most often is around 35 PSI, some a little higher. Not very often are they lower anymore, but I would put the air pressure in that the manufacturer recommends. That's what the car was built for and designed for and engineered for. So I think that's probably the best place to go with it.
Yeah, just open that driver's side door and look at that panel down there, and they'll have that info. Here's a text that says, what's the best way to keep a car battery sufficiently charged when not driving much in the winter? Should one start and idle it regularly? And if so, for how long?
Well, you should actually best to start and drive it for a while. It's not best. The vehicle doesn't do all that well idling, sitting still. It's best to take the vehicle out and run it down the highway if you can. That will get the battery charged up. That'll get all the fluids flowing and warmed up. It'll get the exhaust warmed up, and so that doesn't rust out. It's just best if you can cruise it down the road. But, yes, if you start the vehicle and let it idle, the battery will recharge. Or, you know, they make these trickle chargers, these battery things that you can hook up to the battery that are designed to leave them hooked up and plugged in all the time, and it just keeps the battery at full charge, and when it is at full charge, the charger shuts off. So it just trickles a little bit of charge in there to keep it up to full capacity.
I remember I bought one a few years ago. They're really not that expensive, and they really do a pretty good job, wouldn't you say?
I would say they're not expensive, and they do a good job.
Yeah.
And especially if you're storing a vehicle for the winter, you don't want the battery to sit outside to go dead and to freeze because that wrecks the battery. So if you're going to leave the vehicle outside, make sure you keep the battery charged up or remove the battery and put it someplace where it won't freeze.
Okay. Listener says, I just bought a new RAV4 TRD. I've read that nowadays it's not necessary to undercoat or rust-proof cars anymore. I have also heard in Minnesota, because of salt in the road in the winter, you should undercoat or rust-proof. Dan, what would you do, is the listener's question.
I do not undercoat or rust-proof. I agree that there is quite a bit of undercoating and rust-proofing that the manufacturer does. And the last thing the manufacturer wants is a reputation that their vehicles rust out too soon. That's not good for sales. So they're pretty careful about that anymore. That being said, I still see quite a few cars that come in that have been rust-proofed and undercoated, and so I don't think it's a bad idea. I'm just not sure that it's necessary.
Okay. Yeah, I know we get that question from time to time. Another question we get, especially this time of year, is what should I do to plan storing my car for the winter?
Well, we started talking about it with the battery. Take precautions so that the battery doesn't go dead and freeze, because that'll wreck it. You want to, some people suggest overinflating the tires a little bit, which is a good idea for a couple reasons. One is, in cold weather, the air pressure has a tendency to drop anyway. And the other reason is they say that it'll keep the tire from getting a flat spot in it, which I haven't really seen before, but they still recommend it. And then just be sure that it's, the fluids are all full. Make sure you store it clean. You don't want to store a dirty vehicle because, then it attracts or it holds the moisture, and that's what causes rust and things. So and store it dry. Don't put it away on a day that it's raining out. Put it away when it's dry and clean and all of that. And you know, if you're particular about the exterior and the paint and everything, they make covers for cars that you can put over them too, and that's probably not a bad idea.
You mentioned this too along those lines. It just dawned on me that if you get your car washed and you store it, those brakes can rust in about 5 seconds. I think it seems like they can really turn to rust.
You do want to drive the vehicle before you put it away. Even after you wash the vehicle in your driveway, you should go take it for a drive so that the brake rotors warm up and dry off. Because you're right, overnight they do get a coating of rust on them that has to be rubbed off. And it's no big deal.
Right.
But it's best if it doesn't happen. It's best if you put it away dry.
Well, what's best is if you want to get in touch with Dan and the crew there at Lloyd's Automotive. How do we do that, Dan?
Well, give us a call. We'll be here this morning. You can call us at 651-228-1316. Come on over. We are at 982 Grand Avenue in St. Paul. Or the other option is find us on the web at lloydsautomotive.net, LLOYDS, lloydsautomotive.net.
Excellent, Dan. Let's get together next Saturday morning to help our listeners out, all right?
Sounds good.
Have a good week, Dan.
Thank you.
Burns from Lloyd's Automotive.